and the amputees of the lower classes, and then maintained at a cost in credits and technical skill in excess of the upkeep of an ordinary flesh-and-blood arm.
Granted. Luke suppressed an impatient sigh. Is that what the suit is about, then? A perception that arms are being cut off at a higher rate than the government recommends?
No. It's about the Jedi giving a cursory statement to law enforcement and then leaving, or dashing off without giving one at all, or just refusing to answer one crucial question the investigating officer asks, and in every case, getting away with it.
I still don't understand, then.
I'll walk you through it. The officers show up and ask questions. The Jedi gives a 50-word statement. The officers say, thanks, now we need to go back to the neighborhood station for a full statement. The Jedi says, sorry, I have places to be, and he's gone. Did the Jedi respond with appropriate force? You think so, but at the government level, we never learn, because a short while later he's on Kaminor, dealing with an organized crime family, then in the Hapes cluster.
Usually the Jedi does make a full statement, does cooperate to whatever degree the local authorities require.
Usually, yes. I have a report here of a Jedi Knight named Seth Helen, who assaulted law officers just a few weeks ago. Whatever he needed to rush off to do, he never came back to offer full cooperation to the authorities, did he?
Luke suppressed the urge to fidget. He found himself wishing that Nawara Venn were here, though Dalla was herself not being backed up by an advocate. I can see how incomplete reports and investigations would be frustrating to the government, but you have to trust that we made the right choice at the right time. It's what we're trained to do. The smile she turned on him was as frosty as anything Luke had seen in the snowy outback of Hoth.
I do, do I? We'll get back to that. Grandmaster, the hypothetical incident I described shows at a very minor, very frequent level that the Jedi are above the law.
Not true. Anyone in the bar situation you described could have intervened with lethal force to save the victim from his beating.
And then would have been obliged to make a full report and stay in contact until the investigation was resolved. The Jedi don't respect that law, or any law they find inconvenient. And the choice to sever the arms comes dangerously close to a judicial sentence being enacted at the time of the intervention. Judge, jury, executioner, Jedi.
I'm sorry you have that impression, Luke frowned. I'd come here hoping that I could persuade you to drop the case. But now I'm wondering whether I should go through the whole trial just to demonstrate to the public that we do cooperate with the authorities, that we don't consider ourselves above the law. Dalla nodded, her expression agreeable.
Let's talk about Kip Duren.
Master Duren is a fine, responsible Jedi.
I'm not talking about the Jedi he is now. I'm talking about the teenager who destroyed most of the life in the Kerida system all those years ago.
Luke, his composure no longer entirely intact, shifted uncomfortably. He was under the influence of the dark side of the Force at that time, affected by the mental sendings of a long-dead Sith Lord, and in the years since, he has proven himself to be courageous, a defender of life.
Yes, he has. I'm not questioning that. But I want to take you back a little over 30 years to shortly after he killed everyone who hadn't yet managed to evacuate Kerida in the 2 hours he generously gave the population. Of course, the solar system he destroyed was an Imperial system, your enemy at the time, which does mitigate his crime in your eyes. Is that why you protected him, shielded him from legal ramifications, trained him?
No.
Why did you?
Because I could look into his heart and see that he had cast the shadow of Exar Kun out, that he was no longer an agent of the dark side, that he had repented.
He said he was sorry and he meant it, and that was sufficient justice for the millions who died on Kerida?
You're oversimplifying. I knew that he was on the right path again.
Because you have the power to see that, because that's what Jedis are trained to do.
Yes, Dalla sighed.
And because they're trained to do that, to see into people's hearts, sort truth from lies, see into the future where the criminal has reformed and turned to a life of picking flowers, they can decide who should be thanked and who should be cut down, who should be forgiven and who should be left for the ordinary officers of the law to convict. They protect the common citizen, but do not answer to him. They do not pay for their mistakes. They obey government orders when those orders conform to their moral code, and not when they don't. And that's wrong.
Any other group exhibiting that degree of arrogance, that unconcern for the rule of law, would be classified as a criminal organization. That, ultimately, is what this case is about.
She was wrong. And yet, she was chiefly wrong from the Jedi perspective. Remove the Force from the equation, and she suddenly became right.
That was jarring to Luke. It was so hard for him now to remember what it was like to not have the Force always contributing to his decision-making.
It was then that he detected it, the evil that the Force had brought him here to see. He did not see it as a person or an object, but as a process, a trend, one that he was a part of. Understanding things as much as he could through Dalla's perspective, through the perspective of the common citizen, the one truth he could discern was that if the galaxy thought that the Jedi were above the law, abuses were sure to spring up from that notion, as toxic weeds growing rapidly from a pile of manure. Young Jedi, seeing the ease with which their masters slid out from underneath common but inconvenient civic responsibilities, would come to think that such behavior was their right. A few, on the fringes of the border between the light side and the dark side, would discern that Kip Duran had escaped any visible consequences of his actions at Carada, would accept Luke's assertion that Darth Vader had been redeemed, had died a Jedi instead of a Sith, despite his many murders, and would not understand the true meaning of the story. The answer settled across Luke like a leaden shroud. To prevent this evil from growing, he had to lose this case, to be punished. That was what the Force had brought him here to understand. He met Dalla's gaze again. "Will you be prosecuting Master Duran next?"
"I will not, but I could authorize extradition for him to the Imperial Remnant to face their charge of planetary genocide. Head of State Jacket Fel has rather reluctantly presented me with a proposal from the Moff Council on that very subject. But such a thing could be avoided, of course, if we had already set another decisive example."
Luke gave her a slow nod. "I came here hoping that face to face, without advocates whispering in our ears, we could negotiate a deal. Now, having heard what you have to say, I am certain we can."
"Tell me."
Chapter 7. Ninth Hall of Justice, Coruscant.
This really was a courtroom, a place where justice was dispensed. And during regimes like Jason Solo's, injustice as well. The walls were somber wood panel. The tables and the judge's elevated bench were a dark, beautiful calf-colored antique marble from Ithor. Luke watched the proceedings from a slight state of detachment, brought on by his lack of sleep and the air of unreality his own decision had created. The judge, a severe-looking falling woman, her pale green skin contrasting sharply with her dark judicial robes, sat at her bench, studying the documents Nawara Venn and the government prosecutor had given her upon her arrival. The audience at the back of the chamber buzzed with a little conversation, and Luke could feel expectation from them far in excess of the level of noise. It was here, the first action in Luke Skywalker's trial, and they were on hand to see blood spilled, metaphorically speaking. Finally, the judge looked up, glanced at Luke and the two attorneys, and spoke.
"In Alliance Case Y00-43-17014, the Galactic Federation of Free Alliances versus Luke Skywalker, we have negotiated conclusion, agreed to this day by the prosecution, the defense, and myself."
A faint moan arose from portions of the audience. Luke could sense the source of their dismay. Weeks of court hearings, stories of Jason Solo's murderous actions, embarrassing revelations, were all about to be headed off before they could take place in all their exploitation news glory, wiped away by a plea bargain. It should have been funny, but Luke didn't feel in the least humorous.
"The defendant will stand."
Luke and Nawara got to their feet.
"On the revised list of charges, now consisting of one charge, reckless endangerment of a population, how do you plead?"
Luke cleared his throat. "Guilty, Your Honor."
"You are found guilty as charged. Please sit."
Once Luke and Nawara were seated, she continued.
"Thus ends the trial phase of these proceedings. We now move on to the sentencing phase. for a period of time beginning tomorrow at 1 hour before midnight in the current time zone and continuing for not less than 10 Coruscant years, you are exiled from Coruscant. You will maintain a distance of not less than 5 light years from this world. During that same time period, you will not act as Grand Master of the Jedi Order, nor in any position of authority or consultation within the Order. During that same time, you will not visit or approach any closer than 1 light year to any world upon which there exists a Jedi Order temple, Jedi Order school, or any other Jedi temple facility. During that same time, you will refrain from establishing any new Jedi Order temple, Jedi Order school, or any other Jedi temple facility, or any business that structurally or organizationally resembles those concerns, and thus might readily be converted to such a concern after your sentence is fulfilled. You will appoint Jedi Master Kenth Hamner to perform the duties of leader of the Jedi Order, and will subsequently exercise no influence over him for the duration of your sentence. Any violation of the above restrictions incurs a more severe penalty, incarceration in an Alliance maximum security prison facility for the remainder of the 10-year period. By the provisions of this arrangement, your sentence can be commuted or a pardon issued if you can convince a board of inquiry that you have determined the nature of the events and other causes that led to the aberrant and destructive behaviors of Colonel Jason Solo leading up to and during the Second Galactic Civil War. The board of inquiry to be made up of one prominent member of each of the following: the Galactic Alliance Judiciary Branch, Galactic Alliance Medical Association, and Galactic Alliance Armed Forces. Each of these individual members to be chosen by the office of the Galactic Alliance Chief of State. Do you understand these terms?
Luke nodded. Yes, Your Honor. He understood them very well. He and Dalla had negotiated them point for point only hours before. But though he had played a part in selecting them, Luke still felt as though the situation were a dream that was sad and tiring.
It is so ordered. The sentencing phase is complete, and by my order this case is concluded.
The judge stood, and all others in the chamber did as well, to watch her leave by her private exit behind the bench. When she was gone, the courtroom erupted into conversation, shouts, pleas from the members of the press for Luke to spare them a few words. He kept his back to that portion of the chamber. Security troopers admitted members of the Jedi and Luke's family into the area of the chamber reserved for advocates and their clients, and suddenly Luke was being embraced by Leia, Han, Ben, and Jaina, while other Jedi positioned themselves as a living wall between Luke and the audience.
10 years?
Ben said. He looked as though he'd been hit in the head by a speeder bike.
We'll fight this, Leia told him.
Kenth Hamner?
That was Han, looking confounded.
Was he chosen because he's the dullest Jedi ever? He says 2 sentences and it puts Kowakian monkey lizards to sleep.
Luke addressed his sister's comment first. We won't fight this. I negotiated it. I agreed to it.
Without benefit of counsel?
That was Nuwara Venn speaking under his breath, just loud enough for the Jedi to hear. And it won't be the full 10 years, Luke told Ben. You heard the conditions for commutation at the end.
Han shook his head.
Buddy boy, Dalla gets to appoint your tribunal. If they were still alive, she'd pick Palpatine, Lumaya, and Shimra Jemaine to be your judges.
Luke waved the objection away. Captain Savar approached. He was in the GA security dress uniform, his expression somber, perhaps even sad.
Judge Sude left word that you could leave the courtroom by her door and the back corridors if you'd like to avoid the press.
Luke nodded. Please.
This way.
That evening, Luke called a conference of the Jedi Masters Council. I'll keep this brief, he told them, as I have a lot of preparations to make before tomorrow night, and in the interest of not drawing out an unpleasant event. First, I withdraw from my duties as Grand Master of the Jedi Order until such time as my sentence has been served, commuted, or struck down in the court.
This is effective as of my departure from Coruscant.
Kip Duren smiled. For the first time in this whole mess, you've given me some hope.
Luke looked at him curious.
How so? You didn't resign as Grand Master. Clearly you plan to come back and resume your position.
I do. I hope to. So while I'm gone, there will be no wild parties in the Master's chamber.
It felt good to be able to make a joke, even a stale one.
Second, I appoint Master Kenth Hamner as governing master of the Order. Hamner, a tall, fair-haired man with features that spoke of generations of family wealth and rule, his posture military perfect, offered Luke a wan smile.
And I did not even have the opportunity to negotiate before the sentence was passed on me.
Chief of State Dala and the military have faith in you. Luke gave him a sympathetic look. Your own fault for leading a lifetime of military experience.
I will serve as best I can, Grand Master.
Master Octoramus, recovered from the minor injury she had sustained during Balin's rampage, asked,
What are you going to do while you're gone, Master Skywalker?
I plan to do what I negotiated with the Chief of State, to understand what brought Jason to the dark side, and then set up protocols to anticipate the same thing happening in other Jedi. If we're lucky, this may also have some bearing on what has happened to Valen and Seth. I'll start by retracing as much as I can the travels Jason undertook prior to the Killa crisis. I'm hoping that the answer lies somewhere along his journey.
Master Hamner placed his hands together and peered over them at Luke.
Since that is distinctly to the Jedi Order's benefit, even though you can't advise us in any significant way until your sentence is concluded, and since the terms of your sentence do not come into effect for another day, I feel no guilt in offering you whatever resources you need to accomplish your mission. We just need to get them all transferred within a day.
I'll be using Mara's yacht as my main transportation and home, so travel is not an issue. But operating funds are. I don't exactly have savings.
Hamner nodded.
I'll set up an account for you. Not a drawing account, as that would be proof of Jedi Order support after your sentence begins. A sum constituting 43 standard years of back pay, I think.
Luke smiled, amused. And please, bank it out of some world that is not part of the Galactic Alliance, or likely to join it any time soon.
Consider it done. You'll have all the details in hand by breakfast.
That's all I have to say.
Luke looked among the Masters. Sadness threatened to descend on him, to constrict his heart. But he kept it at bay by an act of will.
Any issues I need to address as Grand Master, you need to bring to me as soon as possible.
Kip Duren nodded.
We'll sort it out.
Silgal was the first to rise. As she approached Luke, her action acted as a signal to the others, who all got to their feet. She enfolded Luke for a brief moment in her rubbery arms.
We will keep you home for your return, she told him. May the Force be with you, always and everywhere.
Walking with Luke back to their quarters, Ben said,
I'm going with you.
Luke managed another smile.
I don't think so.
Why not?
Well, first, you're not a convicted felon, and you don't need to serve the sentence of one. Second, no teenager I ever knew, myself included, could survive being in the constant company of a parent for 10 years.
I have you on a point of logic.
Ben raised a finger, looking ridiculously like a Jedi Master addressing a room full of younglings.
No teenager can remain one for 10 years.
Conceded. Still, Ben, I think you should stay here.
Ben's jaw set. Now, as was often the case whenever his tendency toward stubbornness hit him, he truly resembled his mother.
You're my master. I'm your student.
You're a full Jedi Knight now, even if there are plenty of places in the galaxy where you can't legally vote or drink. Surely you didn't forget your promotion. You only talked about it for 2 years.
I wasn't that bad. And you're a rank above master, so you should have a student a rank above apprentice.
Interesting logic.
Dad, this is my mission, too.
Ben's voice was suddenly no longer that of a wielding teen.
I was Jason's apprentice. In the end, he tortured me, tried to make me a Sith. He killed Mom. Do you think I'm going to be able to rest ever without understanding why?
Luke fell silent, as he considered Ben's words. Not speaking, they rode the turbo lift down to the upper residential level. As they reached their door, Luke came to a decision. "You're right. Pack up and make your farewells." Ben sagged in relief.
"Thank you, Dad."
The next morning, Luke reflected that one of the virtues of living as a Jedi was that packing was really easy. A lightsaber, a bag for a few changes of clothes, his kit of tools, parts, and meters for maintaining his artificial hand, a data pad stuffed with data and popular literature, and not only was he packed, but his quarters were almost empty as well. He looked around his bedchamber and found it nearly bare. All that remained were shelf items, hollows of his life with Mara, knickknacks acquired during his years of travel or sent to him by admirers, a few articles of clothing he had decided to leave behind. The thought that the room might remain empty, unchanged for the entirety of his sentence, or that the room might be needed and reassigned, with the remainder of his things swept into a small bag and stored, scrubbing his presence out of the temple like one last stain, was depressing. He had to go, and soon, and that fact alone was enough to make him want to stay. His door chimed. He called, "Enter," and moved into the small living chamber. The main door slid open, revealing Silgal. The Mon Cal master nodded her respects. She entered, allowing the door to shut behind her.
"When not studying Valen's test results, I have spent time in the last few days looking for references to odd behavior matching Valen's or Seth's, and I have found something."
She tilted her head, as if recollecting, and her next words were in a different tone of voice. Luke suspected she was quoting.
"Though I have lived among humans for many years, some of the differences between our ways choose not to fade into irrelevance. The electroencephaloscan, for example, would be considered a grave and very personal intrusion by my kind. Fortunately, my order knows of a means to keep even it at bay. Unfortunately, when utilizing it, we cannot demonstrate that we have functioning brains."
Luke snorted, amused. "Who were you quoting?"
"Jedi Master Plo Koon."
Luke considered. Plo Koon had been a Jedi in the last years of the Old Republic, had died, in fact about the time Luke was being born. One of the many victims of Emperor Palpatine's Order 66. He was a Keldor, a member of a species that was not often seen out in the galaxy at large. They were not oxygen breathers and had to wear special breathing masks when visiting most other inhabited worlds. Why was that quotation so difficult to find? With anyone else, he'd be worried that his question sounded like a criticism, but Silgal had no human neurosis that made her prone to interpret offhand remarks as complaint.
"It was not transcribed as searchable data in our archives. It was a recording of an interview between Plo Koon and a Jedi Knight who was assembling a documentary project on the species represented within the Order. He, too, was a victim of the Purge, his project unfinished. I have been using automated vocal translation software against holo-recorded materials, searching for a list of keywords related to Valen's situation. And this morning's pass flagged the word electroencephaloscan in this entry."
Good work. Was there anything else useful in that interview? Silgal twisted her body from side to side, a Mon Cal simulation of a human shaking of the head.
"That appears to have been, for Plo Koon, a humorous aside, and the subject was not further explored."
He said, "My order knows of a means." Who was he referring to? It couldn't have been the Jedi Order, since we found no other reference to the technique, and since he was talking to another Jedi.
"He would have said our order."
Silgal tilted her head. Familiar with her ways, Luke took it as a gesture of self-appreciation. Some human nuances of speech were still difficult for her, even after all her years among them. "Yes." Luke pulled his data pad from his belt pouch and flipped it open. As he used it to access the temple computer archives, he realized with a pang that this might be the last time he would do so, for many years, or perhaps ever. He scanned Plo Koon's service file. He knew many of its details already, His own studies had made him very familiar with the career of his own first master, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Obi-Wan's teachers and confidants. Obi-Wan's master, Qui-Gon Jinn, had been a close friend of Plo Koon. But Plo Koon's record offered few leads. It mentioned no other order to which the long-dead master might have belonged, though Luke knew there was one prospect more likely than any other. Luke snapped the datapad shut. I'm guessing he was referring to the Barondo sages. He might have studied with them before joining the order, which means that's a trail 80 or 100 years cold. I might as well make the sages the first stop on my grand tour. He frowned. There's no record of Jason visiting them, but his travels are badly documented. I'm going to hope for the best. I just wish I had time to trace all of Valen's movements to see if he's had any contact with the sages.
I have time, and I have access to the full order archives.
I couldn't ask you to do that, and as an exile, I'm not supposed to have access to order resources.
You did not ask. I decide for who I am a resource, and your sentence said you cannot advise, not that you cannot be advised.
Thrown off for a moment by Silgall's resolute tone, her unhesitating rejection of Galactic Alliance government wishes, Luke stepped forward and took one of Silgall's broad hands between his own. I sometimes forget, with our very orderly system of ranks and duties, that I have friends.
You established this order with logic, and you made your friends with your heart. They should not follow the same patterns.
The door slid open, revealing Ben, dressed in his customary black, a cylindrical bag in dark green on a strap over his shoulder.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Luke shook his head. You didn't. We were just finishing up some business. Is the speeder ready?
It's ready.
Then let's head down.
Up.
Luke raised an eyebrow at his son. I thought I said to get us a speeder and have it ready in the lower hangar.
You did, but I got new orders in the meantime.
From whom?
Master Hamner.
Luke sighed. Kenth could have waited until Luke was out of the building before beginning to countermand his orders.
Let's go, then.
The turbolift took them up, and to Luke's surprise, for engaged again in conversation with Silgall, he had not paid attention to what Ben said into the turbolift's controller, opened at the great hall level. The three of them stepped out into a crowded hall, and conversation, which had been expectant in tone, died. It looked as though every Jedi on Coruscant, and perhaps some currently stationed in nearby star systems, was present, as well as many non-Jedi. Some faces were sad, a few even tear-streaked, and even among those maintaining a proper Jedi calm, there was an atmosphere of sadness, of resignation. Ben's next comment came as a dry whisper.
I don't think I've ever seen so many brown robes together in one place. It's like a showroom for the world's dullest textile factory.
Luke repressed a snort. Quiet. Master Hamner approached, so Luke stepped forward, extending his hand. Kenth, was this your idea?
Leia's, mine, every member of the Council's, and many others besides. Many had messages, messages they'll deliver personally as you make your way to the front of the hall. But all of them had a message in common.
Kenth put one arm across Luke's shoulders and turned him toward the distant main entrance, then gestured with his free hand across the expanse of Jedi Masters, Jedi Knights, apprentices, and friends.
40 years ago, there was one practicing Jedi in all the galaxy, and the Order and the Temple were just ill-formed notions taken from suppressed rumors. Today, what you see before you, this is your doing, Master Skywalker.
Despite himself, Luke felt his throat trying to close.
Not alone.
His words were just a touch hoarse. Kenth nodded.
Not alone? But remove any other contributor from the processes, and the end result looks only a little different. Remove you, and it all goes away, like a holodrama switched off in mid-scene.
Gently, he took Luke's bag from his hand. Then he gave Luke a little push forward.
I'll have this put in your speeder.
That was the signal for the others in the hall, who pressed forward singly or in small groups, shaking Luke's hand, offering him embraces or kisses of farewell, some of them with tears glistening on their cheeks. Ben, also relieved of his bag, received these attentions as well, always present in the periphery of Luke's awareness. There were Kip and Octa, Cam and Tion, Saba Sebatine in all her reptilian majesty, Kyle Katarn, the doubly sad Horn family, visitors such as Jag Fell and Talon Card. There was a who's who of the Red Squadron and Rogue Squadron veterans Luke had flown with so many years before and since, Wedge Antilles foremost among them. There were Jedi Knights and apprentices he barely knew. Such a change from years before, when he had personally trained every member of the Jedi Order. A change both satisfying and a little disquieting. Leia, Han, and Jaina were among the last to intercept him, and held him the longest.
"You'll be home soon,"
Leia told him, forcing a cheerful tone to conceal the misery she was clearly feeling. Luke smiled at her.
"Define soon." She shook her head.
"Informative answers are not the Jedi way."
"Hey!"
Ben, wrapped up in the embrace of his cousin Jaina, sounded miffed.
"You stole that line from me."
"I first said it 20 years before you were born, before I was even a Jedi."
Han took Luke's hand and pulled him into a wampa-like hug.
"You know, anywhere you are in the galaxy, give me a shout on the holocom, or give Leia a squawk through the Force, and the Falcon will be right there."
"I know. You'll take care of R2-D2 for me while I'm gone?"
Han grinned.
"Are you kidding? Having R2 with us means C-3PO only talks to us half as much. I should be paying you."
Jaina tucked herself under Luke's arm for the last few steps out of the Great Hall.
"Dala's going to be sorry she did this."
Luke frowned at her.
"That sounds suspiciously like a thought of revenge."
"It's not. I just know how things work. Inevitably, some mess will arise that she can't solve, that no other Jedi can solve, and she'll know what a mistake she made."
"Be charitable."
On the steps outside the hall, in the afternoon sunlight descending in brilliant, steeply slanting shafts through the uneven cloud cover overhead, Luke paused to give Jaina one last hug.
"She's trying to do the best she can for the Alliance, the only way she knows how."
"Well, she's not very bright."
"That's not charitable."
"Oh? I thought you meant honest."
The airspeeder that had been acquired for Luke and Ben's departure was not the Grandmaster's usual one, or Ben's red speedster. It was a big white air barge, a model with a built-in droid brain that would return the vehicle to its home when its current users were done with it. Luke let Ben take the controls for the trip out to the spaceport, while he took in what might be his final view of Coruscant. In this late afternoon hour, shadows in the canyons between mountain-high buildings were already dark as night. The thousands upon thousands of streams of airspeeder traffic were already putting on their nighttime cruising lights, and the sun, its lower edge peeking out below the layer of clouds in the west, seemed larger and more orange than any other time of day. He burned